I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Imagine attending a school where there are no classroom or lunchroom aides, no counselors, no secretaries, no assistant principals, no art or music or sports programs. That dire scenario could become a reality if the Philadelphia School District can't find $304 million and hire back the 3,700-plus employees who received pink slips last week. The School Reform Commission adopted what is being dubbed a doomsday budget, and district officials have been looking to City Council, to Harrisburg, and the Teachers Union to close that gap. Today on Radio Times, we talk about the consequences of this funding crisis for students, for their families, for teachers, the district, and the city at large. We have two guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Kate Shaw is Executive Director of Research for Action. That's a Philadelphia-based nonprofit education research organization. It analyzes reforms at the local, state, and national levels. Also served as Deputy Secretary of Post-Secondary and Higher Education in the Pennsylvania Department of Education under Governor Ed Rendell. Was a faculty member at Temple University for about 10 years. And Kate Shaw, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. Also with us, Tom Farrick. He has covered government and politics in Pennsylvania since 1974 as both a reporter and columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's founder, senior editor of Metropolis, and most recently, a contributor to Access Philly. And Tom, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Glad to be here.
Let me begin with you, Tom. Do you see this as a risky, even dangerous game of what feels like chicken being played over the Philadelphia school budget?
It is, and that's what it was meant to be. So it's turned out that way. I think that the district, wisely from a tactical standpoint, did what I call the kill the kitty maneuver, which is you take the most vulnerable programs and you say, we're going to have to kill the kitty if we don't get the money. And they took programs that are really essential to school operation. I would argue, though, that there's less kabuki theater to it this time than previously because they just don't really have the money.
Right. And this is for real.
They are down to the bone, and I think they've convinced people in Harrisburg that they are real, that their financial situation is real, and that they've done their best to try to right the ship, but they haven't quite got there.
Well, Kate, this is not the first crisis the Philadelphia School District has had to face, but I guess in the hierarchy of crises, where do you put this?
I think it's pretty high up there, Marty. I mean, I think that the way that we fund public education in Pennsylvania is particularly regressive. There's a recent report out that ranks Pennsylvania 39th in the country in terms of the degree to which we fund our school districts regressively at the state level. And basically what that means is that poorer districts get far fewer dollars per pupil than do richer districts. And I think that's playing out here in Philadelphia.
What's interesting but also troublesome is that while we're talking about Philadelphia as the biggest city here, other cities that have poorer populations, York being one, Tom, also having to deal with their version of trying to balance their budget and making cuts as well.
And suburban districts as well, who are fairly affluent, they suffered a cut in school subsidy at the same time Philadelphia and the others did around 2010. Mm-hmm. Right after Governor Corbett was elected. The reason it doesn't hurt them as much, although it hurts, is that they get a much smaller proportion of their budget from the state. So if you get 10% of your budget from the state and that's cut 20%, you know, it's overall. But Philadelphia and some of these others that are heavily dependent on state aid really got whacked.
Right. Well, yeah, it looks like you want to add something. Go ahead, Kate.
Well, one of the things that we know from the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center is that per pupil spending across the state has dropped by an average of $459 per student. So if you play that out in a 25-student classroom, that's about $11,500 per classroom. But in Philadelphia, the cuts have been at about $1,300 per student. Mm-hmm. And so, again, if you look at a 25-student classroom, that's about $33,000 per classroom that the school district has had cut from its instructional spending or classroom spending.
Let me quote something that William Harner, he's Pennsylvania's acting Secretary of Education, wrote, and this is just pulling out a sentence or two. He said, it is a common misconception that Governor Corbett has reduced funding to Pennsylvania public schools, and then goes on to describe how, from his perspective, schools have been, the Corbett administration has been able to maintain the kind of funding under Ed Rendell. I want to have you respond to that, Kate Shaw.
Well, I think that that sentence is probably referring just specifically to the basic education subsidy, but that's just one line of funding that the state gives to school districts. So while that line of funding has been is slightly lower than it was in the 2010 level, it's about 5% less, really what's happening is that other lines that directly affect Philadelphia have been gutted, like the charter school reimbursement, for example, hit Philadelphia at $100 million cut. I think when the Corbett administration talks about the overall level of funding, we know that the largest increase really has come in the funding for state pensions. So there's been a $700 million increase in funding for school employee retirements. And that really is the bulk of any increase that they're talking about. But if you parcel that out and you look at the money that's actually going to schools themselves, there's been about an 11% cut across the state.
One of the arguments from the Corbett administration is that there isn't the stimulus money that Governor Rendell had, and that explains in part some of the tough decisions that the Corbett administration has had to make about school funding. What do you say back to that, Kate?
Well, I say that, yes, the stimulus funds have indeed been cut by the federal government, but one of the things that we know is that stimulus funds also went to other departments in the state, like the Department of Corrections and the Department of Public Welfare, but the Corbett administration fully restored those cuts to the Department of Corrections and Welfare, but did not fully restore those cuts to the Department of Education.
What do you think, Tom?
There are a couple of components to the, you know, so the question is, why is Philadelphia in such a bad shape, as, say, compared to some others?
Right.
One was the cutting of the basic education subsidy, or to put it another way, not substituting the federal money, the hundreds of millions of federal money that was in there. So they did not do that. The second thing was is that the district directly got some of its own federal stimulus money to the tune of about $119-120 million. That went away. The third one was is that the state used to reimburse for charter costs statewide to the tune of $250 million. A lot of that went to Philly because a lot of kids are in charter schools.
Right.
And then the fourth one was a block grant that the governor set up, I say parenthetically, and everybody sort of disagrees with me, to help Philadelphia. But one of the things is it gave people extra money if they had, for instance, full-day kindergarten, and they zeroed that out. So when you added up $250 less in the block grant, $250 less for charters, and a $500 million decline in the not substituting it, and the school district's own loss of federal money, you're coming up with $600 million less for the school district of Philadelphia. That's very real.
Do you think the district bears any responsibility for these dire financial straits, Tom?
Yes, to this degree. Everybody pretty much knew that the federal money was temporal money. It was going to go away. It was designed to sustain and help states, generally speaking, while they climbed out of the recession and their tax revenues went back to where they were. There was no political belief that Congress would reinstitute them at the level they did. So you pretty much could guess that that was going to happen. The other one is that with Corbett, you know, in June of that year, just about everybody I know knew that Corbett was going to be the governor and that he was going to attack or slice education funding. So if you're sitting at the school district looking ahead and seeing these locomotives coming down at you, you can't pretend it's not going to happen. And I think they pretended it wasn't going to happen. Now, that was another regime, so that was a different time.
Is this a different time now? And I have to say that Superintendent Height, you know, was bitterly upset about having to send out these pink slips, Kate, and said you can't run schools without professionals, also without secretaries and lunchroom aides and classroom aides. And I'm trying to imagine what a district looks like if you don't get those people in place.
Right. Well, it turns out that we know what happens when you don't have those people in place. So, for example, we know that over 100 school nurses have been laid off or have left due to retirement. We know that the current ratio of school nurses to students is about 1 in 1,025. The Department of Health and Human Services endorses a 1 to 750 ratio. And so what does that mean in a school? Well, we know that it means that students are not getting their medications or treatments delivered by medical professionals. We know that children are not receiving urgent care in the schools. And so if I were the school district, I would be worried about potential lawsuits if something happens to a kid because their medication was not distributed by a nurse. We also know that school nurses improve attendance because they help kids deal with medical issues and sometimes can address them within the school so that the schools don't have to send the kids home. And so we know that school attendance goes down when the number of nurses in schools goes down. And you can say the same thing about school counselors. We have a horrible ratio of students to school counselors. Currently, we have an average of 1 to 500, but in some schools, the average is one counselor to 900 students. Right. The American School Counselor Association recommends a 1 to 250 student ratio. And we know that when we don't have counselors, we know that academic achievement lags, we know that retention rates lag, and we also know that kids have a more difficult time going to college because those school counselors, especially for poor kids, are the only adults that can help them navigate that really complicated college application process. So when budgets are cut like this, there are real consequences for attendance, achievement, school safety, etc.
Tom, I'm sure there are people listening in the audience, perhaps, you know, older like you and me that went to school in the 1950s.
Glad you added that me.
In the 1950s, you know, when there were 45 kids in a class.
72, Sacred Heart Manoa.
Okay, so is that where you, who were saying, you know, why do we need all these support services? Why do we need classroom aides? Why do we need counselors? Why do we need, you know, special folks that are working in public schools?
Well, I would say get real. I mean, to run a high school without a secretary, without a guidance counselor, without any support staff, without lunchroom staff, without, you know, it's just... I like to quote Tacitus, who's a South Philly ward leader. Actually, he's not. He's a Roman historian. And he could be a South Philly ward leader.
He could be.
And he, and I always remember this, when Rome conquered Britain, he said, they made a desert and they called it peace. And that's what we're in the process of doing with these cuts, because this is, it's ludicrous to think that you could run a high school without a single secretary and assistant principal. The school district, you could argue years ago, had the luxury of surplus and too many people doing jobs, too many hall monitors, too many of this. They've been gone really for years, I think. And you're down pretty much to the skeleton staff, and they're taking away the skeleton staff.
But do you think, and we're about a minute away from our first break here, but do you think, Tom, that because of all the things that you all just said, that there will be some kind of resolution to this budget crisis and these layoffs?
Oh, I don't think it's the conditions of the schools that make that much difference. I think that there's two factors in play here and why I'm more optimistic today than I was last week that money will be forthcoming. One, there's fear, the fear factor. The fear factor on the part of the governor that he's going to get the reputation as the guy who kiboshed education in Pennsylvania and he's running for re-election. He doesn't care about Philadelphia. He's not going to win Philadelphia. But if that word gets around, it hurts him politically. Two is the fact that all politicians fear the unknown. If this issue is not settled at the table, it will be settled in the courts, probably the federal courts, because someone's going to sue the minute these cuts go through as, you know, violating state standards or discriminating against poor students. And once it's in the hands of a federal judge, you don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And I'll mention one thing. The Chester District, which is a ward of the state, was put in the hands of a federal judge, and he ordered the state to give them more money.
Interesting. Well, let's take a very short break and get back to our conversation. That's Tom Farrick, who joins us along with Kate Shaw. We are talking about the funding crisis. I don't think I'm being hysterical there. Funding crisis here in Philadelphia, $304 million shortfall. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What should be done? Give us a call. We'll be right back.
With aortic stenosis, a few steps can leave you breathless. But for many older patients, open heart surgery is too risky. Now, St. Mary offers a new way, the TAVR technique. Instead of opening the chest, a new valve is threaded through a small incision in the leg. Less trauma, less risk, and faster recovery than open heart surgery. 215-710-5888. St. Mary Medical Center in Langhorne, supporting WHYY. It's your health. Expect more.
You decide the winners at WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs, June 20th at WHYY in Philadelphia. Food fanatics will love this two-hour tasting, featuring an array of mouth-watering munchies served up by local restaurants and businesses, all competing to be named 2013's Best of the Chefs, with summer beer garden, specialty cocktails, and live music. WHYY's second annual Best of the Chefs. Tickets at whyy.org/events.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life. Every week on our program, we choose a theme, and this week, the theme is This Week. We're going to bring you favorite stories from the 7 days leading up to the program. We will cover big news stories in a way you will not hear anywhere else, and small personal stories unfolding far from any TV cameras or news gatherers, a radio searchlight across the week we all live through this week.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Last week, more than 3,700 Philadelphia School District employees, including teachers and aides, counselors, assistant principals, nurses, received pink slips, and that's almost 20% of the workforce. Superintendent Height called this decision nothing less than catastrophic. The district faces a $304 million budget deficit. We are talking about all of this with Kate Shaw, Executive Director of Research for Action, and Tom Farrick, who now contributes to Access Philly, a longtime Pennsylvania journalist. And again, we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. What do you think should be done to address this budget shortfall? Kate, Tom was talking about the fact that the state actually took over the Chester School District, and that happened here in Philadelphia about 12 years ago. So what does that put some responsibility on the state for the dire straits the district is in, and also how to sort of get out of this problem?
I think it's hard for the state to blame what's happening in Philadelphia wholly on the school district itself when it, in fact, has been in control of the school district for 12 years. So I would certainly say that there's an added layer of responsibility that the state should feel in districts in which it's taken over. But having said that, there's no research that shows that state takeover of a school district necessarily is going to improve the performance or achievement of a school district. And so, you know, whether that decision was made for political reasons or for educationally sound reasons is something for maybe Tom to comment on. But
you want to comment on that, Tom?
It was made for political reasons.
For political
but,
reasons.
But it came at an interesting time, I think, because there was a belief that what was happening when it came to the Philadelphia schools is that everybody would stand in a circle and point at the other person.
Right.
I'd blame the and this was precipitated, if you recall, by David Hornbeck, who was superintendent at the time, who said, "I have $3 billion to run the school district. I need 3.5. I'm going to run it until it's closed, until I don't have any more money, and then I'm going to close the schools in March." And that was the end of a long period of discontent with the state. And the takeover by the state of the city, by the city district by the state, was really precipitated by Philadelphia legislators who felt that they need to break, sort of do a Gordian knot break on who was going to get blamed. It actually has had a very positive effect financially on the district for the first 10 of the 12 years that it was doing it before the rug got pulled out with the budget, Covert's first budget.
But, and it maybe it's too soon to tell. I don't know how long experiments are supposed to last before you know whether they have worked or not. But, Kate Shaw, part of the whole takeover was to bring competition to Philadelphia so that there were charters and there were other ways that families and their children could choose the kind of school that they wanted. And, you know, it's still a mixed bag, it seems to me. But nonetheless, do you think this experiment has given us something to go on to help us understand education better? What works?
That's a great question, Marty. I think that at their best, charter schools can provide us with examples of really innovative education that can serve students in a really effective way. I think the best traditional public schools can do that as well. Hmm. What we know after 12 years of charter schools in Philadelphia is that some of them are good and some of them are bad. We know that now. So charter schools as a silver bullet that we're going to come in and save the district and save kids that were going to failing schools, you know, generally speaking, I would not say that that's happened based on the evidence that we have. But I think overall what we really need to do is make sure that for our public schools and our charter schools, we have a really strong and transparent way to evaluate and hold them accountable, because those dollars that would have been going through the district into traditional public schools are no longer doing that. And I think that we have to make sure that our charter schools and our public schools are held to really high standards, and that if they're not meeting those standards, the School Reform Commission can act on that.
Tom, there's a theory, I'm not sure if it's a conspiracy theory or not, but there's a belief that the goal is to essentially charterize all the schools in Philadelphia. Makes sense?
Well, I was there. I was present at the creation when they made charter schools, and I know why they were made, and I know who was behind it. And most of them were African-American politicians in town and others who had come to this realization sometime in the late 90s. The schools were not working. They weren't doing their job. They needed to improve. Change was not going to come from within. That the intransigence or difficulties of the unions or the Mandarin nature of the bureaucracy was not going to solve their problems. And there was that could be demonstrated by 30 years of contract negotiations and waiting for change to happen. They decided to build a build-around, and that was charters. No one who I talked to from that period thought that it would be as big as it is. They thought they'd have a half a dozen, it would be mom and pop. They don't think they foresaw that you'd have 55,000 children in 84 charter schools 10 years later. And the reason wasn't because of a vast conspiracy. The reason was when they opened up a charter school, the parents, potential parents, lined up around the block to get into it. Mm. And the charters, because I've done polling on this, remain incredibly popular with parents to the tune of a 94% approval rating.
Even if the charters aren't doing as well?
They care about a safe, caring environment. They want to be treated like customers. Charters do all that. Believe it or not, when we asked them that in a focus group, this was, education, quality of education did not come up unless we raised the issue. And that doesn't mean they don't care about education. It may they feel it's in the hands of the professionals. Here's what I care about. So they were beating the pants off of public schools in terms of parent satisfaction. And that is true today. There's a wait list of 30,000 for charter schools in the city. And I don't see us turning that around. I think that's just going to get bigger.
Well, and whether that's charterization or not, or just kind of a fallout of decisions that were made perhaps a long time ago. But, I'm trying to imagine, Kate Shaw, being a parent sending a child to a school in Philadelphia and trying to figure out how is this going to get resolved? Is my school going to be closed, for instance? Mm-hmm. Is it going to have enough teachers? Are there going enough to be aides? And the reverberation for families has got to be just so palpable.
Right. I think that's one of the things that I would hope that the decision makers in the state really take into consideration, which is that there's long-term ramifications for essentially gutting the funding of a school district like Philadelphia. And it has long-term economic ramifications for this entire state and for the region. I think parents should be asking the question of whether or not they can send their kids to schools if the schools are not going to be schools in anything but name only. As Tom pointed out, it sounds like there may be a resolution this time around, but every year the same thing happens. And so I think it would be wise if we could get to some of the root causes of how we fund our school districts across the state, and to take a look at what other states do. Because I think sometimes in Pennsylvania we think this is the way it is, this is the way it has to be, this is the way it is in every state. That's simply not true. Hmm. In states surrounding us, New Jersey is a great example of this. The funding formula in New Jersey at the state level is actually very progressive, and it drives dollars to the school districts that need it most. We don't have that in Pennsylvania, but that doesn't mean we can't have it in Pennsylvania. We have to find the political will, I think, but the evidence is there that it can happen.
I do want to get to some callers, but Tom, you had some interesting pieces in Access Philly about, frankly, middle-class families, and we're seeing in Philadelphia young couples moving into the city, probably wanting to send their children to their local public school and worrying that it's not going to be the kind of quality that they're looking for, or have the kind of safety measures that they're looking for. And it seems to me all this budget crisis is going to influence their decisions as well. And they get to choose because they have some money.
They have the options. And I was wondering whether the combination of AVI, which is the reassessment, which raised taxes on 47,000 households in the city, which you'd have to say that probably middle-class, upper-middle-class people. And if they were young parents, the differential between, say, what I would pay in South Philly versus what I'd pay in Havertown is less, although Havertown's still more.
Yeah.
But if I go to Havertown, look at all the schools offer. I don't see middle-class parents. I don't see any parent, any caring parent want to send their child to a wasteland school. Now, the question is, what can they do about it? And those parents have the means to do it. And middle-class parents have been fleeing the city for decades. Mm-hmm. The schools don't have middle-class children, as a rule of thumb, and opting out of the system. And now poor people and working class people are doing the same thing by going to charters.
Mm. Kate, you want to add to that?
Well,
then
we'll
get to our callers.
One of the things we know from looking at not just Philadelphia, but other districts that have a lot of charters or a lot of school choice is that the huge concern is when you have a system in which choice is going to be made, you need to have the information and the resources to make the choice. So even going beyond income, which is one thing, parents need to have access to information about the school so that they can choose among the schools. And so all you need to do is think about a school district like Philadelphia, where you have lots of people who don't have English as their first language, or people that might not have access to the internet because there's a huge digital divide in the city. They can't get access to the information that would allow them to make a good choice. And so what happens is that those are the families whose kids end up going to some of the worst schools. And that's even true with, you know, people who might choose a charter school down the street and they don't have access to information showing that student achievement at that school might not be so great. So I think when we have a system that's increasingly moving towards a choice model, what research tells us over and over again is that if parents do not have the wherewithal to make choices, there are certain kinds of families that are going to really suffer.
And that's Kate Shaw, Executive Director of Research for Action. That's a Philadelphia-based nonprofit education research organization that analyzes reforms at the local, state, and national levels. Tom Ferrick, also with us, a longtime reporter and columnist here in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia, founder, senior editor of Metropolis, and most recently a contributor to Access Philadelphia, or Access Philly, I should say. That's a nonprofit news and information organization that covers the greater Philadelphia area. We are talking about the funding crisis for the Philadelphia School District, a $304 million budget shortfall. And last week, more than 3,700 employees received pink slips. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let's get Corey from, it looks like, Fishtown to join our conversation. Corey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi there.
I'm a support teacher in a charter school right now. I'm a Temple graduate trying to stay and teach in Philadelphia, and the pool just got so much smaller for jobs. I love the school I'm at right now, but they can only offer me part-time. It's just really difficult to see colleagues. I was just working at Andrew Jackson this year. I know personally that the school counselor mentioned in that New York Times article who's getting laid off. I just can't imagine that school running without people like that and without aides. I have my degree to be a full-time teacher, but as a support teacher, I realized this year how necessary it is to have those additional heads in the classroom. We wouldn't run without our special ed support.
Well, I appreciate your work, Corey, and also your call to Radio Times. Tom, anything you want to add to what Corey just said about the, I mean, sort of a living example of the importance of support teachers?
Well, I think it's also a living example of the sort of limited options that people have. If you're a teacher and you want to work full time, there's not a much of a market out there right now. The suburbs have cut back; they're not hiring for the most part. Obviously, the city's not hiring. She had mentioned she's trying to go full time at a charter school. I don't know why she's not full time at a charter school, but I mean, it's tough. And I think it's also tough when you consider, from a political standpoint, again, the dilemma of the teachers union about whether or not to make the concessions that have been asked for them or to fight. And not to make them. And that's a big decision for them. But they really have to, you know, a lot of people say, in a moment of bravado, I'll quit and I'll go get a job somewhere else. To which I say, where? They're not there. They're cutting back. And then it's also tough if you want to make your career, because the average age of a Philadelphia school teacher is probably somewhere in their mid-30s. Now, if they were 55, 56, you'd say, don't compromise. Just ride the dinosaur into the bushes. You can hang on. But if you're looking forward to a career in the public schools, I don't know what your mindset would be.
Yeah. What do you think, Kate?
Well, I think we know that one of the many fallouts of having a district that is in fiscal crisis, a district that has had, you know, multiple changes in leadership, et cetera, is that they're going to have a hard time retaining high-quality teachers, for sure. They're going to have a hard time attracting them. And then if they have them, what Tom just described is exactly what's going to happen. The high-quality teachers, many of them, are going to be looking for jobs in other districts that are more stable and that have more resources. And it's such a shame because many, many teachers in the School District of Philadelphia are in Philadelphia because they love these kids and they want to stay in the district. But everybody has their breaking point, and we know anecdotally that there's an awful lot of teachers who are, you know, looking really hard right now to find a place to land where they're not going to be constantly worried about being laid off.
Tom, let me ask you about this is, I guess, the some of the latest news out of Harrisburg, which is that the Corbett administration, the legislature, looking at something like $100 million that they want to give or add to the Philadelphia School District budget, but with a contingency, major concessions from the union.
Well, the state's not going, if the union's not going to settle before June 30th, which I doubt they will, then and the state's going to have to
and
step.
And the contract is up this summer,
it's
right?
It's up in August, but they, you know, it's up August 31st, but they're talking about it. If I were Jerry Jordan, I would not settle until I know what money was in the pot. But it isn't. It's a natural thing for a legislature to say, okay, we'll give you this, but it is contingent upon the unions kicking in some money. So you won't get this unless the unions do it. It creates a pressure point in the unions, but it's also a safety valve for the state. Mm-hmm.
Well, and Superintendent Hyde and others have said to the union there needs to be some kind of give back as well. And I'd just be curious about your thoughts about that, Kate. It's a tough issue.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to say about it. It's a really tough issue. And as I just pointed out, I think the teachers are really feeling beleaguered. I think all of these cuts, even if they haven't directly been laid off, if they're being asked to teach in schools that don't have counselors, don't have assistant principals, et cetera,
And then you want some money back, or you want me to?
I think it's a tough situation politically, for sure, for Jerry Jordan. It, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think that's an easy ask.
Yeah, Tom, what marks would you give the Philadelphia delegation in Harrisburg? And there have been some criticisms that they
no, not of the, not of our delegation.
Well, go ahead. The ball is in your court. Go ahead. We'll have to keep from crying, perhaps, but go ahead.
I guess, the moment for me came when Superintendent Hyde, did what he had to do both with the cuts, and also he started saying he came out with a Sunday story that said teachers are going to have to look at seniority differently, and we're going to have to pick them differently. I think that was him trying to ameliorate the Republicans in the House by saying, I'm speaking your language about teachers. But the Philadelphia delegation got together en masse from the House. Most of them came and went and had a meeting with him. And I was not at the meeting, nor was I invited. But what they said basically is, why are you putting this all on us to deliver this money? And why are you going after the teachers' union? Don't go after the teachers' union. Now, it would be great if they got in the room and said, we will do anything we can to help. But they didn't do that because they're an all-defensive team. They are a block.
Because they're a minority?
No. They are a minority. You're correct. They are a minority. But they can act. Their power acts is in a block. If Tom Corbett needs 26 votes for something, and it's not education, it's like his transportation bill, they can give it or withhold it, and that's where their power lies.
Oh, interesting. And that's Tom Farrick, who joins us along with Kate Shaw. We are talking about the fact that the Philadelphia School District faces a $304 million budget shortfall, and the clock is ticking on what to do about it. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Corey, thanks for that call. We'll get some more callers in after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY Cornwall Manor, an active senior living community in Cornwall, Lebanon County. Situated on a 190-acre wooded campus, this community offers independence, wellness, and fitness activities, educational and musical programs, and the peace of mind of on-site healthcare if needed. Cornwall Manor's range of residential choices includes apartments and homes, including their newest options, the Carriage House and the Grove. Details and tour information online at cornwallmanor.org.
Coming to WHYY's Hamilton Public Media Commons, our popular Young Journalist Summer Camp for students in grades 9 through 12. Learn from the staff of WHYY's renowned news department, create video news stories, and work with the media instructors of the award-winning Hamilton Commons. Learn all aspects of production, interviewing, shooting and editing video, and more. Two-week sessions start June 24th and August 5th. RSVP at whyy.org/camps.
On the next Fresh Air, the background behind the secret surveillance programs leaked by Ed Snowden. We'll talk about programs collecting metadata, the laws that govern those programs, and the questions those programs raise about privacy with journalist Shane Harris, the author of a book about the rise of America's surveillance state. He covers intelligence for Foreign Policy magazine. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, again talking with journalist Tom Farrick and Kate Shaw, Executive Director of Research for Action. And let me get, looks like Mike from Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. Mike, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi there.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm calling. My name is Mike Mullins. I'm one of the group that's out on Broad Street fasting. In particular, a group of us was moved to start a fast because of what we saw as the most catastrophic document we could imagine, laying out basically sort of an impossible situation for all of our schools in September. And I think we were specifically moved by the just complete abandonment of several long-term customary roles in the schools. In our case, the elimination of the student safety staff position to have any monitoring of kids at recess and in the lunchrooms. And so I think for us, you know, and for a lot of people that responded to this, we're just hoping that the depth of this crisis can become clear on a large scale in the city and across the state. And so, we just wonder what else you believe it's going to take to raise the level of the crisis to what I think everybody who works in a school and many, many parents feel is staring them right in the face right now.
Well, Mike, I appreciate your call. I know people are also fasting in Harrisburg on this issue. Kate Shaw, you know, saying what can be done to put some pressure.
I think fasting is probably a pretty effective form of pressure. I also know that this is now getting national coverage. We know that all over the country, you know, major newspapers like the New York Times, Diane Ravitch is blogging about this. What's happening in Philadelphia and in this, you know, the face-off between the state and the school district is absolutely getting national attention, and it's not particularly favorable.
Mm, what do you think, Tom? Thanks, Mike, for the call.
Well, I was always looking for a unifying force in terms of leadership, someone who would come together and say, okay, we have to make this work. And for a while, or by this I mean finding the money somehow, and for a while I didn't see that force. I didn't think it was going to happen. Right now I think it is going to happen. I think that the governor's office and I think that the Senate office, the Senate Republicans tend to be the home of the adults in Harrisburg. And I think that there's been a realization in Corbett's office that something must be done and that there's political liability, hurt and harm if he doesn't do it. And I think Pileggi thinks the same thing. I'm hoping the two of them get together along with others and try to make it happen through one means or another. And they have lots of means in which they can make it happen.
Mike, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We'll get back to our callers. But let me ask you about city council. And certainly there are efforts to raise some taxes here and there to try to find some money for this budget.
City council did its duty. I mean, they were asked to come up with, the ask was $60 million from the city, $120 million from the state, and like $130 from the teachers' union. City Council authorized the $2 cigarette tax, which would bring in about $45 million in a half year. And the mayor stepped forward and said, we can get $28 million from the delinquency stuff that we're doing. So you're talking 40, 50, 60. So they met the $60 million goal. Now, the legislature has to approve that cigarette tax. It's in their power to approve it or not. There's also some late talk, and I think it's very encouraging talk, of taking, we raised our sales tax in Philly from 7% to 8% a couple of years ago because of the recession.
Right.
That was due to stop and expire. And there's talk of keeping it on and dedicating it to the schools. And that would be a cool thing because that would be about $130 million a year that would be guaranteed to go into the schools. I haven't heard details on this. But that may be a substitute to the cigarette tax.
You had mentioned
this is all. This gets into higher math, and I don't mean it to. I apologize.
No. But I mean, is there a lot of uncollected money from property taxes from landlords that haven't paid their taxes for all these stories that we hear about?
On paper, yes. In reality, try to get it.
Well,
On paper, a lot. In reality, really difficult to collect. But they didn't try before, and now they're trying. So let's see how Tom Knutson does.
Okay. Go ahead.
I just also want to point out that the district itself, of course, has put its pound of flesh on the table as well. There's been a 45% reduction in staffing in central administration in the school district. And, you know, as somebody who works with the school district, you know, in lots of ways, as we do research and evaluation on things that are going on there, I can tell you that particularly in a choice situation where the district is now more responsible for creating a set of accountability measures and holding folks accountable, it becomes really dangerous to have a central administration that has been cut to that degree.
Mm. Almost half then, right?
Almost half.
Let me see what Margot from Old City has to say. Margot, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, hi.
Hi there.
And thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I am a mother of a freshman. She's going to be a sophomore at Central High School. And I'm also a social worker, and so I'm looking at the issue on two sides of the coin. On the one hand, my daughter has had an amazing year at an incredible school with teachers who work harder than anybody I've ever seen, and I have also worked with children and families, at-risk children and families who go to schools that don't have the kinds of resources that Central does.
Sure.
And they are all just as deserving. And I have to say that this issue has just been heartbreaking for me. And I guess my question is, you know, it's hopeful to hear what your guests have been saying about some of the possibilities that are being put forward. I have to say that I am in one of those groups that has the ability to leave the city and go to Cherry Hill or wherever to ensure that my daughter gets at least the education that she needs, not necessarily the diversity that she needs and that we need. And I guess I would just like to ask your guests,
sure,
if they were in a similar position, you know, what would they do if this was their child, if they valued diversity, if they cared about children all over the city struggling with this issue? What would their choice be?
Sure. And Margot, I like the way you frame that question. Let me see what first Tom Ferrick and then Kate Shaw have to say.
Well, let me just mention something parenthetically here. Central High does not get more money and more resources than other high schools. Central High, even before these cuts took place, got less per pupil than some of the other high schools. Part of that is because a lot of high schools have special ed students who get more. But part of it was because the district was directing Title I money and other federal money to those high schools. Central High does not get more money. So that's number one.
Right.
Number two, I confronted this issue. I have two sons, and one of them is 25 and one's 21. I don't know how that happened, but
how they got so old.
Yeah, without me getting old. It was really astonishing.
Yeah,
but we had a choice when my youngest son was coming in, and we applied to Meredith. We live in South Philly. We applied to Meredith, McCall, Greenfield, and we were turned down because his school in his catchment area was Palumbo, which at the time was the fourth worst performer in the city, elementary school then. And they needed him because under DSEG they needed white students and they wanted to balance the student body. We weren't interested in having our child be a social experiment. So we sent our child to a private school, the Philadelphia School, which was a very good school. And he was later joined by his brother. And it was a tremendous financial burden on us. But we decided we wanted to stay and pay the tax.
Right.
That is to say, the education tax.
Right.
And then my sons went to secondary school that was private school. And that was difficult too. So, you know, we made those decisions. We thought of moving to the suburbs, but I had escaped the suburbs once, and I didn't want to have to go back.
Yeah,
but it's not an easy decision for any parent to make.
But I think also what Margot's call, I mean, she says, and this is about Central High School, which is a very, mm-hmm, very good high school, but she talks about caring teachers and getting a good education with a diverse student body. But it reminds me, Kate, about, I mean, so much of the stories about schools and public schools are stories about what's gone wrong, mm-hmm. and not to sugarcoat things, because there, I think, are serious challenges there. But I wonder whether we don't hear enough about hardworking teachers and, you know, dedicated staff and students that do well in the country's public school system.
Yeah, I think that that's a really good point, Marty. And I think, you know, when you listen to the national conversation that's happening around what's wrong with schools, because yeah. that's always the conversation. I think, you know, for quite a long time now, the spotlight has been focused on teachers. Teachers are the problem with the schools. And it is true that teachers, you know, have an incredible ability to take a kid, you know, meet a kid where they are and really move them along in terms of achievement. And it's true that there are some teachers that are not as good as others. But I think it's a pretty simplistic thing to put the blame for everything that's wrong with schools on the shoulders of teachers at the same time that you're taking any tools that they have to do a good job away from them. And so I think this whole question about, you know, what Tom was just talking about, what the caller was talking about in terms of choice, you know, I think we have to ask ourselves, why are we in a situation in which there are such huge disparities in what we call quality of schools, both within the city of Philadelphia, between Central High and maybe a comprehensive high school elsewhere, or between, you know, the schools in Philadelphia and what's happening in Lower Merion. I think those questions, the question about equity and whether or not people all have, you know, the capacity to make the kinds of choices that some people make, I think those are questions that we as a society really need to be thinking about, because in Pennsylvania, we haven't done a great job of leveling the playing field.
Let me see what Austin from Philadelphia has to say. Austin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking the call.
You're very welcome.
So I would recommend, just to her comment just 2 seconds ago, I would recommend the book Finish Lessons by Posse Solberg about school quality instead of differences. He went to a private school in New York and made this great comment. He's at a private school, and he says there are no private schools in Finland, and people miss that completely. And he said that parents in Finland do have a choice. You can choose to send your kid to any school, but they're all the same.
Hmm.
So I think that lesson there. My question... And actually, I'm seeking some clarification. I don't actually know how this works.
Okay.
And I would like some help. Philadelphia, obviously, everybody pays the state tax. And since we're a city of 1.5 million people, I would assume that our contribution to that tax is pretty large. Now, how is that redistributed or sent back, basically, from Harrisburg? For school districts, is that along demographic lines, or is that just... standard, this is a set rate. So that I need some help with, because
I feel like
I've heard a lot of comments.
No, fair enough. Austin, thanks for the call to Radio Times. I'm not sure everyone's pointing at everybody else. But just from my understanding is that schools are largely funded by property taxes. And, of course...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Local schools are funded by property taxes.
And so the more property taxes you have, the more money you have to spend for schools.
You have wealth.
You have wealth.
And the formula is a complicated one. It's based partly on your ability to generate wealth.
Right.
School districts that give more money towards their schools will qualify, in a sense, for more money from the state. But the thing that Kate was talking about that people object to, really, is what they call the hold harmless provision in the law. And that is, it says that if you're a wealthy district, you will still get state aid to the tune of something like 14%. And it'll go up 1%. In other words, there's a floor beyond which you will not fall.
Hmm.
There are districts in Pennsylvania who have sufficient wealth where they don't require any state aid if you use the formula. So that's a problem. The problem in changing that and getting a more equitable formula is that if you try to get a more equitable formula without increasing the size of the pie,
right?
Radnor, Haverford Township, Doylestown are going to lose money to pay for Philadelphia. And what you need is an increase in the size of the pie. You need a governor who's willing to increase the school subsidy substantially so that that new formula can work. And we don't have that governor. Yeah. And we won't have that governor if he's reelected next year.
And I guess, yeah, I mean, the no,
sorry
not,
to say.
No, no, well.
If you're hoping for a change in the next 15 minutes, it's not going to happen.
No, go ahead, Kate.
Well, one of the things we know is, I mean, Tom's exactly right, that Pennsylvania as a state relies very heavily on property taxes to fund school districts. So there are other states for which, you know, if the pie for school funding is 100%, other states are closer to 60 or 70% of that funding coming from the state as opposed to local property taxes. The problem with relying on local property taxes is that when you have poor urban or rural districts, they don't have the tax base. So they don't have the tools they need to address any deficit. And what you see in the suburban districts is you'll see them raise their property taxes so that they can meet the needs of their students. And even when the state cuts back funding, they can step up and fill that gap. You can't do that when you're in a poor urban or rural district.
Right.
About a minute before we have to say goodbye, Tom, just as a kind of veteran reporter, so how do you think this all will end? And let me just add on to that. Are we going to meet in another year and have some version of this conversation we just had today?
And by that, we could make it an annual event.
We certainly could make it
our annual crisis.
I'm trying to avoid that. I'd rather talk to you about something else, but nonetheless.
Well, I think the odds of something coming around to the tune of close to $300 million today, as I speak to you at this moment, are fairly good. I think we won't know it until the last minute around June 30th. I think it will not equal $300 million, and I think, like all of these things, it could blow apart up in Harrisburg because of nothing to do with Philadelphia. So it requires a lot of moving parts to come together. But I'm fairly optimistic. And if we get it, I think the current management of the school district has the capacity. This is part of a 5-year plan, by the way,
right,
to keep this budget going, barring any surprises, on an even keel going into the future.
Well, we could go on, but my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Kate Shaw, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And she's Executive Director of Research for Action. Tom Ferrick, thank you very much as
thank
well.
You.
And he's a contributor to Access Philly. And thank you for those phone calls. For more information about Radio Times, go to whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.